You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about, little fun, little entertainment. My Red Hat friends lost their mind as the Biden EPA finished off their tailpipe standard. And all I kept hearing about is, you know, they're taking our freedoms. They're taking our freedoms. They're stealing our freedom to buy that gas guzzler that I'm complaining about gas prices being too high. Yeah, lost the mind over the last couple of days. And look. As long as they keep people focused on that, focused on nonsense, they're stealing our freedoms. Maybe they won't pay attention to the nonsense that has been the Republican Party platform, which, again, for working people, not good. For average, everyday working people, not good at all. And I keep asking this question, what have Republicans done in my lifetime? And I'm opening this up to a big swath of time. What have they done in my lifetime that benefited working people? Solely, they introduced a bill, they passed the bill, they got it signed by the president, and it went into action that helps working people. One could argue, that when George H.W. Bush was president, he did sign the Americans with Disabilities Act. Okay, but that was a Democratic Congress that did that. They put it on the desk of a Republican president. I'm saying, what have Republicans moved forward on? What has been their baby? What has been their ideological push to make working people's lives better? Look, they're trying their darndest to make workers think that they're on their side, yet I haven't found the policy. Again, there's rhetoric and there's action. There's the stuff we see on Fox News, and there's the stuff we see on the podcast circuit, and there's the stuff we see when they give their little minute speeches. There's a whole different world of what they write down and sign their name on in a piece of legislation, which is why I found it interesting that I came across the Republican Study Committee's 2025 budget proposal. This is their moral document. This is their list of... These are our priorities. These are our values. And the headline, look, they're really good at making headlines. Fiscal sanity to save America. And you go through some of the chapter headings, like my favorite is ensuring liberty through deregulation. Yeah, because we want corporate America to be able to poison the water and the air at will. We want, you know, workers to be less safe because it's going to save the employer a nickel a day. Yeah, we want to deregulate and make everything the Wild West again. Now, as I always say, I hear people say, yo, they're job-killing regulations, Rick. But what about the people killing lack of regulation? Yeah, we don't get to talk about that at all. Another one of my favorite, creating opportunity through tax reform. And I love, this has been their fetish my entire life. Gutting the federal government of resources to be able to do the things that we, the people, want them to do. which is why they get to run up massive debt and why we are, you know, in financial uncomfortable area as far as I'm concerned. And their solution, more tax cuts. Their, again, their only tool in the toolbox is tax cuts. That's it. We're going to give more money to people at the very top and the hopes that maybe if we do it enough, their insatiable appetite for more will be satisfied, and it will eventually, someday, trickle down to the rest of us. Hasn't. Their other chapter, opportunity. You getting a theme here? Opportunity through empowerment and self-sufficiency, which basically means, well, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And well, those of you who can't, tough. One of my other favorite ones is personalized and affordable health care. This is where they, you know, again, this is the kind of soft repeal and replace thing. This isn't about fixing the Affordable Care Act and solving some of the problems that it has. No. This is about, you know, again, you know, tax stuff and that. But I got to tell you, my favorite part of this entire plan is the chapter on saving Medicare. Because we're going to have to kill it. Sorry, got to kill Medicare. In order to save it, we got to kill it. And this one. Oh, this one's glorious. Preventing Biden's cuts to Social Security. And as I read this, I'm going, do they really believe we're all that stupid to buy that? Now, I know they believe that their voters are. I know that they believe that the people who vote for them are sufficiently stupid to fall for this. But the rest of us, not so much. This idea that Biden's going to cut Social Security is wrong. It's a lie. But it goes back to something that, you know, I've always believed in. When someone accuses you of doing something, it's because it's what they're doing. And this is another example of that, where Republicans have talked extensively about how they want to eventually make cuts to entitlement programs. Now, these aren't entitlement. To me, these aren't entitlement programs. These are benefits that people worked for, paid into, and expect at the end of the road. Just because we've got a broken Congress right now because one of the houses is controlled by lunatics, doesn't mean working people should get the shaft. And it certainly doesn't mean down the road we should be pushing off our problems on kids into the future. This idea that we're going to raise Social Security again and keep raising the age and keep raising the age, sorry, not there. Now, what they've come around to this time is, well, you know, we're going to start when, you know, people are like 18, 19, you know, we're going to start cutting down the road, you know, we're not going to affect you. You're going to be fine. We're just going to screw those people down the road. And they mean that. They don't really care about your kids. They don't really care about this program. In fact, they've always hated Social Security. They've always wanted to get rid of it. And in my mind, this is where we, voting people, have to look at what they're doing and what they're saying. They want to cut it. Very clear. And I know that, you know, during the State of the Union, they know we would never do such a thing. But understand, they've been the party who, they were against it from the beginning. They were against all of the New Deal programs from the beginning. And I keep saying, you know, they're trying to repeal the 20th century. And if you look at their proposals, their moral documents, their statements of who they are. That's what it's about. It's about destroying that legacy that built what we're still kind of holding on to. We're still, you know, clinging to the last vestiges of that really prosperous working class that my grandparents' generation fought for. That era where if you worked hard and played by the rules, you actually could get ahead. They want to take us back to the days where, you know, desperation, poverty, wages, That's the reality. So going to be interesting to see where this all goes. It's infuriating. But the tailpipe standard, interesting. Interesting bit of insanity in here and to share some thoughts. I've asked my good friend Mike Williams to come talk with us. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Mike Williams from the Center for American Progress is going to be here to talk about the EV revolution. And, well, are Red Hats losing their mind for a reason or just because they like to? Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, my Red Hat Brigade losing their ever-loving freaking minds over the fact that President Biden and the EPA finalized the tailpipe standard rule. All I kept hearing is, how dare you tell me what kind of vehicle I have to buy? And hey, I love my gas guzzler, while simultaneously complaining about the price of gas. It's a very weird situation. And here to share some thoughts on, well, what this tailpipe standard actually does, and if you'll be able to buy your gas guzzler. I've asked our good friend Mike Williams to come talk with us. Mike's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, where you'll find his work. He is the specialist on domestic climate policy. So I think the right guy to ask about this. Mike, thanks for taking time for us.
Anytime, Rick, anytime. I'll try not to be too snarky about gas guzzling cars. I actually have one myself. So we can be honest about this.
No. And then this is, let's start what this is. What, you know, I've heard a lot of the right wing losing their mind that this is taking our freedom somehow. And I got to tell you, I don't want my freedoms taken away, but I do like the freedom to breathe clean air and drink clean water and all of that. But what does this policy do? What is this rule change? What are the nuts and bolts?
Yeah, this is not taking anyone's car. It's not preventing anyone from buying any type of car. So first and foremost, let's set that aside. The EPA's tailpipe standards are about giving benchmarks and guidance for what manufacturers can make and sell in the U.S. And this is part of the Clean Air Act. Clean Air Act has been a law since 1970. This is about keeping our air clean. It's about taking care of the climate crisis. So this is an update that the Biden administration had to do. And they did it really well, to be honest with you. They did it so well that the UAW and Ford were pretty cool with this rule. This is about making it so that we keep making and selling American-made cars in the U.S. for the next generation or few. The next few generations of cars are going to be clean cars. They're going to be EVs mostly. They're going to be hybrids as well. This is about making sure that that stays here in America and it's not imported from China.
Right. But all I've heard over the last couple of days, Mike, is taking my freedom. They're gonna come. The EV police are gonna come kick down our door and steal our keys in the middle of the night.
Yeah, the EV police. They that doesn't exist.
Are you sure?
There's no EPA police. There's no EV police. Nobody is gonna come seize your F-150. And I say this as the proud owner of a 2018 F-150. I love my truck. I'm not giving it up. But we also happen to have, we live in Maine, so we have a two-car household. We have a Chevy Bolt also. It's amazing. It is amazing technology. We charge mostly at home. It can go 200 to 240 miles on one charge. It works great. And nobody's going to touch my truck. And my electric car helps our family so much. I barely pay for gas now. That's it. It's amazing. Most of our driving is in the electric car, which we charge at home, which is amazing. So again, nobody's taking anyone's autos. And also, this is about into the future. This is not locking in place what happens this year and next year. This is about what starts in 2027 and goes to 2032. And it's in 2032 that we see where the manufacturers have to get to around 70%+ for zero emission vehicles. So it's mostly EVs, but then they also can have a certain percentage for hybrids in 2032. This is 8 years from now.
Yeah, it's only 8 years. Mike, it's only 8 years. You make it sound like it's a long time down the road. It's only 8 years, considering we have to change over our entire infrastructure to support these EVs. Because I don't know about you, and I don't know how many charging stations are near you. I only know of a couple in my neighborhood. So it's going to take a lot of work for us to catch up so that people are able to find charging stations if they're traveling, you know, longer distances. There's a lot here. At least I think there is.
Yeah, no, it's a real concern, Rick. I'll say, though, the bipartisan infrastructure bill had $7+ billion in it to build EV charging stations. And that money is just starting to go out the door to states. And there hopefully should be breaking ground on new charging stations throughout the country this year, 2024. We're going to start seeing a big build out in infrastructure. We saw the agreement from GM and Tesla and a bunch of the other automakers on a common charging standard. So then the Tesla chargers will then fit all the other cars. So we're going to have everything's coming together. We're getting over our VHS beta hump for those of us who are ancient like Rick and I, where we had a debate over which cassette we could watch on. For the younger viewers of Rick's, I'm sorry. I just used that analogy. But we're getting over that hump. And by the end of this year, we're going to see the infrastructure change dramatically.
I'm still a beta guy. I'm still a beta guy. So to bring it to
update, still a beta guy.
I prefer the beta machine. It was a much better machine than the VHS. It was much better quality. I'm still sticking by that, even though both of them are outdated and found the junk heap. To update this a little bit so everybody else who isn't old like us will understand, it's like having a common phone charger. Not letting Apple change it every couple of years or someone else so that you have to keep buying new ones over and over again.
Yeah. And that agreement happened late last year. So the Biden administration worked with Tesla. The CEO and the president are not really on great terms, but they worked together to figure that out, that common charger, and to bring in the other automakers. So I think we're moving in a really good direction. It's okay to be nervous about this. We're in a big technological change, but to say that, you know, it's far off, it's wrong. We're in the middle of it. We, for the first time last year, sold over 1 million EVs. We are seeing EV uptake increase dramatically. Yes, it has the interest and spike has what slowed is what the media said, but it's not like it's gone down. It's just the rate at which it's increasing has slowed somewhat because all the initial people who were buying EVs have gotten their EVs. And now it's getting to that next stage of that next big concentric circle of car owners to get comfortable with this notion of, so I don't go to a gas station to get the thing that powers my car. I do it at home or do it at these charging stations. And so we're getting to that place. And I think within a year or so, when we see all the infrastructure build out, people are going to get more and more comfortable and realize just how much better it is to have electric vehicles. They're cleaner, they're quieter, they're faster, they drive really well. All in all, and also, public health wise, we're saving probably millions of lives over the term of this with the amount of emissions and pollution we are pulling out of the air. There's that too. And helping solve the climate crisis, there's that too. This is a phenomenal addition to our arsenal for fighting climate change.
But here's the thing, and this is where I keep getting the Red Hat Brigade throwing at me that, it's hard to get what we need to make the batteries. that the batteries that we need to charge are done a large part by coal-fired power plants. How do you respond to those?
Yeah, and so the batteries being charged by coal-fired power plants. I mean, so it depends on what state you're in. I'm in Maine. Our grid is pretty clean. So if I plug into the grid, then I get a pretty clean mix of electricity that's going to power my car. It's a mix of gas and renewables and hydro and things like that. If you're in Kentucky, it's going to be more coal, but that's changing over time and changing pretty rapidly too. So that argument is pretty dusty and dead at this point. I would just sort of shake my head at people who say, oh, when they're like, that's just going to be powered by coal. That's just not true. It's really not true. The point about where the materials go to the battery was true. We are actively changing that. Again, the Biden administration and Congress passed a couple really landmark laws last year that invested in building out a battery supply chain here in the U.S. Do you know that because of these investments and because we're pushing for EVs, we're actually looking at tens of thousands of jobs already created in manufacturing for EVs and battery manufacturing in the U.S. So this notion of losing jobs is actually not true. We're gaining jobs currently. Do we need to figure out a robust, strong supply chain? Yes. We are also doing that. In addition to building it here, the administration is working with folks in Europe, with folks in South America to figure out the pieces that we can't get right away. So extra lithium from Chile, working with folks in Canada for cobalt, other places like that to make sure we have a strong supply chain and make sure that it's robust and our allies across the world have access to this too. So us diving into this makes us a legitimate leader. Whereas if we didn't, Rick, who do you think would lead the EV revolution if we didn't do it?
Well, it's going to be China. It would have been China.
It would be China. Exactly.
And this is where I come back to, you know, every transition has its obstacles. And look, I'm a supporter of EVs. I'm a supporter of the idea of electric vehicles or hybrids. I think those are good too. And I think we should be moving away from the combustion engine. You know, I just think it makes sense. But you've got to pull people along, and this is going to be an election year issue. You know, all I keep seeing now is, you know, this is going to be the issue that divides Trump and Biden, because Biden, you know, wants everyone to have an EV and have solar panels, and Trump wants, you know, just a drill, baby, drill, and big gas guzzlers, and, you know, it's the 1950s again, Mike, in their world. So I'm told the voters are going to decide. So is this not kind of not a great time to throw this out?
I would challenge that it might be the great time to put it out there.
How so?
When you look at opinion polling on energy, on clean air, clean water, it is not even close. So 70-80% support across all parties, across all ideologies, liberals, conservatives, progressives, all deep support for clean energy, for clean air, clean water, for fighting climate change. They want all these things. There's support for EVs. That's become a bit of more of a cleaved issue. But for independents support electric vehicles. So I would say President Biden's putting this forward and the EPA's putting this forward for good reason, to give us cleaner air, to fight the climate crisis, and to support American manufacturing. Put that out there and say, so you want to rely on a coal industry that's dying? You want to rely on closing ourselves in and letting China take over the auto industry, which is what they are trying to do, where instead we could work together? And the president, again, he's working with the UAW, with Ford, with General Motors on this. They supported this today.
Yeah, no.
So
no, that's
working
that's...
with American industry, American might, cleaning air, cleaning water, fighting the climate crisis. Let's have that debate. I welcome that.
No, it's a good thing to have. Now, I understand this wasn't, you know, because you listen to the Red Hat Brigade, this is the most radical thing ever. Was this the most radical option? Was this the most extreme option? Where do you put this finalized rule on the measure of I don't want to use the word extreme, aggressiveness. Where do you put that?
As with a lot of things with Joe Biden, it was pretty pragmatic and not maybe a little more forward than middle of the road. But no, it was not radical. No, the first choice for that the EPA put out that we supported, we really liked it. It set a glide path again, and this only starts in 2027 and goes up to 2032. It pushed it so the uptake for the automakers would have to come a little quicker. The EPA decided to take a second option, is actually alternative three. And that was supported by Ford and the auto workers and said where it slowed it down in the earlier years and said, let's take a little time and bring people on board. The EPA went with that. They went with the more moderate, thoughtful option. Again, we had pushed for one. We think we could have done the much quicker one. We really do. The technology's there. The infrastructure will be there. But the president said, no, you know what? Let's take a couple more years to give this some time to really build in. So again, no, not the most radical thing in the world, not even close.
So walk with me then, if you will. 2032, we've gone through these 8 years. We've moved over production. We've done all this stuff. What do people do with who I'm hoping to still have my Jeep, which is, you know, got a V6 in it. I know a lot of people who want to hold on to their cars for years into the future. What happens to those? Do they become obsolete? Do we you know, strangle them with regulation to where they're no longer allowed on the road? What happens? Or do we not have an idea?
No. I mean, I can't predict the future fully. I wish I could. But I would strongly say that nothing would happen that's different. You will still drive your Jeep happily. Your next car probably will be much cleaner. Might be a hybrid. Maybe it'll be an electric vehicle at that point. Because there'll be so many more options. This is about the next vehicle or the one after that. This is about our kids' vehicles. It's really setting that stage. There is literally nothing that will touch the cars that you're driving. Again, this is not regulating you. This is just working with the and regulating the industry and saying what they should be producing for the American public to make sure that it's clean. It's not polluting our air, adding to the climate crisis. So no, my F-150, I hope it already has 110,000 miles on it. I don't know if it's going to make 8 more years. We'll see. If it is, and I'm going to try, I'll keep driving it. But it means that when I replace it, I'm going to have more, better, and more affordable options because the more competition for EVs means the price goes down. We're already seeing that. The price went down for the Mustang Mach-E. Price went down for the Tesla Model Y and the Model S. So Model 3 too. This is a good thing. It just means that next stage, the next vehicle will be cleaner.
No, it's a good thing. I'm looking forward to a future with clean air and water and all of those things. It's just that transition period that I'm concerned about. But as you've pointed out, this is for the next generation. And that generation is really active, engaged in the idea of saving the climate and saving the planet because, it's what we're leaving them. And I'm sure that they would probably like to have something worth inheriting, but we'll see how this goes. I know there's a lot more to get in with this, and I know we'll have plenty of time to talk about it because the Red Hats are still losing their minds. But Mike, as always, I appreciate you taking some time for us.
Thank you, Rick. I always appreciate it.
Good stuff. Mike Williams, a senior fellow there at the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, the website, if you want to take a look at the work that he does. I want to hear your thoughts. Are you on board with the EV future, the electric future? I think it's going to be an exciting period. Anytime there's progress and transition, I think it's an exciting time. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I spent about, 6 hours of my day listening to C-SPAN Radio and the House Oversight and Reform Committee. They called it an impeachment hearing. It sounded like a bad episode of some right-wing rag at 3 o'clock in the morning that they, you know, they straight to podcast kind of thing. But a lot of interesting little moments of the back and forth between Republicans trying to paint Joe Biden as some, you know, great con man who was conning the Chinese government and being able to raise a bunch of money for his son so the kid didn't ever have to work. Some pretty outlandish claims. And then the other side, you know, saying, look, you know, you if you're pointing your finger at Joe Biden, you've got to defend Donald Trump. And how do you do that when Kush got $2 billion from the Saudis? I don't know how you do that, but here to share some thoughts on the hearings and maybe some other topics of the day, I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come talk with us. Sarah is a reporter at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, how the heck are you?
I'm good. I'd like to have those 6 hours of my life back, though, to be honest
right?
with you. Because, look, you know, I was at work and I listened quite extensively to C-SPAN radio. But I'm listening to this hearing. And, you know, some of the claims that the witnesses, I don't know, what was his name, Baba Ghanoush or something like this?
Tony Bobulinski.
There you go. From an Alabama prison testifying.
Oh, that was the other guy. Yeah.
Which guy was in prison then?
Oh, I can't remember the prison guy's name.
I thought it was Baba Ghanoush. Anyway.
The other guy was the Bobulinski.
Okay, so you got these guys who were saying some really crazy outlandish stuff that they can't prove. It's just their word against, you know, sanity. I got to tell you, the one part that grabbed my attention is someone said that they were trying to hook up a job for Joe Biden through the Chinese government and through these Chinese corporations. And immediately you lost me there. I'm going, I'm sorry, not buying that. Everything else I can get behind. Yeah, there was influence peddling. Yeah, they did use Joe Biden's name. This is norm for D.C. But the second they said, oh, Biden was trying to get a job with the Chinese corporations. No, you completely lost me there.
Like, it doesn't surprise me that anybody with a Biden last name is like, oh, I'm going to try and cash in on this, right? What I think Joe Biden is probably did throughout his career is be like, I'm going to make sure everything in my life is above board. Y'all do whatever you want and live your own lives and whatever. But the Chinese thing, like, I really wonder if this is actually Trump related. You know how every time the Republicans accuse Joe Biden of something, it's because Trump is actually doing it.
Yes.
The only thing that I can think is that, you know, there's so many relationships that he has in China. There's all the patents that he was able to get while he was president. There's now the relationship that he has with a Chinese investor who is buying Truth Social. He is really deep into the China thing. Joe Biden is like the last person in the world that China would ever come to. Like, he is not that person at all. Like, I am just so surprised because, I mean, his entire political career has been built on labor, on organized labor and the labor unions and you know, growing up in Scranton and I don't buy it for a second. And I mean, at the same time, he from very early on after the vice presidency, he was building the Biden Center at Penn. And that was just a really, and he was already, you know, working on the book with the publisher. I mean, there was already stuff that was happening. And so it's like, why would this come out of nowhere? And, you know, he's already got all of this other stuff and doing these tours with his book and everything. Why would suddenly, you know, a couple of years before 2020, he just be like, oh, I'm going to go into business with China now? Like, that just doesn't, that logically, that makes no sense whatsoever. Realistically, from what we know of Biden, there's just no way in hell.
No, there's just not. But here's the thing. I mean, you look to that center at Penn, and they did get Chinese money. You know, and that was probably the school looking for money. Biden's son got money from Chinese corporations. That's all true. And how do I put this? I have a problem with the Chinese being able to spread money around in this country in a huge way. But it's not an impeachable offense for Biden to be around people like his son, like his brother, like this institute who are getting money from them. Because one, it's not illegal. And two, they haven't been able to show the overt act. Again, if you're going to try and impeach a president, there's got to be a high crime and a misdemeanor. You've got to have a charge. And there isn't.
There's no bribery here. Like, that's the thing, is it's like, what did China get out of this relationship when Trump was president if they were trying to buy Biden off? Like, that makes no sense whatsoever, because he had no power then. And so then it becomes a question of, well, why then has he not done anything for China if they tried to buy him off during the vice presidency as he was president?
Right.
You know, it just, and has worked against it. Like, he is very pro Taiwan, like the whole bit. Right. So I don't get it. I don't get it.
Now, here's the thing. And this is where I think it was Katie Porter who brought this up and said, look, you know, this is kind of a huge waste of time. We're going down these rabbit holes. If you really want to talk about influence peddling, if you really want to talk about what, you know, what this situation is, you know, across the political spectrum. And I think she said, you know, how many former members of Congress are lobbyists and on, you know, which foreign government's payrolls, you know, we can talk about that. And we should. This is where, if you really wanted to be a functional governing body, this is what you would be focusing on. All of the influence peddling and the access that the Biden, the Trump name, that the Clinton name used to get, that the Reagan name used to get, that throughout the history of this country, any connected former congressman or senator or elected official and their family has access to people saying, hey, can you talk to your brother for me? Can you talk to your sister for me? You know, we'll put you on our payroll. That's been going on forever. If you want to have a hearing on stopping that, I'm 100% behind it.
Not just that. I mean, we're talking about members of Congress, their staffs becoming lobbyists. And then like TikTok had one of the main senators on the tech committee, her old staffer went to work for TikTok as a lobbyist, and so that they could lobby that senator directly. I mean, there is so much corruption. And there are no real laws in place, even though Democrats have proposed it over and over again, like the Stock Act, for example, that requires that, you know, you can't have any investments if your committee is overseeing something that has to do with those investments. You know, Democrats have proposed that bill. Some Republicans are behind it, but Nancy Pelosi isn't even supportive of it because she's got stocks, or actually her husband does. So it is so... The corruption is so big in Washington, and I get this idea that, you know, everybody wants to be like, oh, to hell with all of them and throw the baby out with the bathwater. They're all corrupt. And it's like, no, there really is a pretty big difference here. You know, you can say that Joe Biden's family was sketchy, or that they were profiting off of Joe Biden's name. Donald Trump was profiting off of his White House while he was in the White House. We're talking like, I think the oversight Democrats found something like $70 million that he scored just from the DC hotel. And like 1 week he made something like $400,000 in people that were cycling through the hotel that wanted to meet with him. It's just, come on.
Yeah. I mean, no, look, this has been going on for a long time. And look, I understand people's frustrations. But this is not an impeachable offense because, again, as I said from the very beginning, if you can draw me that straight line from Hunter Biden and his sleazy dealings to Burisma or to the Chinese corporations or to any of this, right back to Joe Biden, and you can show me an overt act, I'll be with you. But they haven't. And what's interesting to me is the more Republicans keep doing this, the more that they keep, you know, getting egg on their face because they don't have anything. And then it keeps coming up that, hey, by the way, you know, the guy that you're backing, he's done some really, really shady stuff. In fact, you know, Democrats brought Lev Parnas in to say, look, you know, look at this side of the aisle.
So there were a couple of things that we knew about that Lev Parnas had said. Lev Parnas was the guy who was one of Rudy Giuliani's henchmen who was tasked with going to Ukraine to dig up dirt on Joe Biden through his son. And Lev Parnas has written a book. He's talked a bunch about this whole thing. But what I think broke this week that I didn't know, and I follow this stuff pretty closely, is Lev Parnas stood in front of Congress under oath and said that Donald Trump encouraged Rudy Giuliani to go to Ukraine and find this stuff. And at one point when he personally met with Donald Trump and got a picture and shook his hand and everything, Donald Trump said to him, thanks so much for all you're doing. This is really going to be helpful. And then the next day they were off to Ukraine. So to me, that seems like bombshell. Like, can we just pause for a minute and talk about that piece of this? Then you've got all of these people that they keep bringing up from the committee who end up being indicted for sketchy things that they've done, right? And it's just really surprising. And now the Judiciary Committee is asking that two members of the Justice Department who worked in their tax division come and testify about Hunter Biden's tax case. And they keep saying over and over again, like, when we have an ongoing investigation and a case, like, we don't bring people in to testify to Congress about it because that really jeopardizes the case.
Right.
And so it becomes kind of funny where it's like, you basically just want the DOJ to throw everything out so that Hunter Biden's lawyers can see what their case is going to be on live TV. Like, really? Okay. Yeah. Whatever, Congress.
No, but here's the thing, and this is where I want to wrap this part of this up. I hate the fact that all of these people are flawed. All of these people were on the dole somehow. All of these people were working the angle to make themselves rich and not to help make things better for the average worker in this country or the average citizen in this country. And I got to tell you, I'm siding with none of them. Because they're all no good in my view, and I know that's you know, just angry American, but none of them are any good in my view. They're all gaming the system, and they all need to be dealt with. Which is why I go back to what Katie Porter said: we should really be cracking down on these former congressmen and their families, and as you pointed out, their staff going and being these lobbyists and having this kind of access. I got to tell you, I'm on that bandwagon. This salacious stuff coming out of these nonsense hearings that are just a waste of time, energy, resources. I'm just fed up with them already.
I agree. I think what is important to note is that there are members of Congress who have very, very high ethical standards and who do not do any of this stuff. There are not many of them, but they exist. And so I think elevating them and making sure that people understand that there are people who are doing the right thing and why they're still principled about it, and comparing it to the people on both sides who are clearly, you know, trying to figure out how they can profit behind the scenes. I agree. Like, I think we want to elevate the good guys and we want to pass laws against the bad guys.
Yeah, look, I'm not naive enough to know to believe that we can stop it. There's always going to be Thanksgiving dinner where a relative is going to be talking to a member of Congress or someone in a position of authority. Hey, you know, maybe I want to think about this, and someone's going to pay them to go to Thanksgiving to do this. I get that that's how things work. But I think there's got to be more transparency in there. We got to start holding some of these people more accountable. Just my thoughts. I got to get your thoughts on this. Evidently, Donald Trump's broke is what the theory is at this moment. He's got no cash on hand. Not going to be able to come up with the almost $500 million for the bond because no corporations will give him that. He's not going to be able to fire sale off any buildings. So what are we expecting? What are we seeing? Are we potentially seeing a bankruptcy in the coming days? What are we looking at?
I'm not really sure about the bankruptcy idea. One of the things that Trump said in a filing this week is that he contacted four brokers who reached out to 30 different companies who were willing to do, you know, to ask who was willing to do some sort of bond insurance. And he said that they couldn't work with any of them. He didn't say that all of them refused him. And I think these are very specific, important phrases, because what Letitia James, the attorney general in New York, asked is, are these people who denied you, or do you just not like their terms? Because there's a whole different thing here where you're just like, I don't like the interest rate, or I don't like this. because what that means is that she will have access to all of his stuff and be able to seize it. And I wonder then if that is part of his plan, that he wants to be able to be like, oh my God, this woman's coming and taking my stuff. But the thing is there's no, there's not like a repo guy going to show up with a chain and drag off Trump Tower, right? Like it's nothing really dramatic and, you know, anything like that. It's basically just something that's going to happen on a computer somewhere. Yeah. And it's, I don't know how you make that into something sensational. And at the same time, like we're talking about straight up fire sale here. He's got properties who that are, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars worth, and they're going to sell it to the person who's willing to buy it. So, I mean, she already has contacted Westchester County, being like trying to get involved and get ready for possessing Seven Springs in New York. That's all already happening. So Monday morning, you know, she might be hauling up to upstate New York and being like, mine now. So poor Eric Trump, that's part of his real estate portfolio. So sorry, Eric.
Throw Eric under the bus. Nobody cares right? about him anyway. But you know, this is the sad part of this. And look, I have a lot of my Red Hat Brigade who are saying, you know, it's unfair that he has to put up all this money to just to appeal. And I got to tell you, there's a certain sense of me that goes, you know, to go through an appeals process. I don't know that I totally disagree with it not being a little bit unfair to come up with that kind of money up front just so you can continue the legal process. I know that's how it is, but the appearance seems a bit unfair.
I think the difference is either you aren't paying for it and you don't have to bond and you appeal, but fees occur, or you put the bond up. And I think that's the big difference here. Like once he puts the bond up, then he's not being fined every day for the money that he's not contributing. So if he, you know, decides that he's not going to put the money up for another couple of months, I think it's something like $87,000 of penalties and interest that he's accruing on top of the wow. nearly $500 million. So I honestly think that the whole bond thing is pretty generous, but maybe they're just trying to figure out a way that, you know, they can give him some special influence because the MAGA people want to help grease his palms or whatever. I don't know.
I got to think the RNC is going to be kicking in somewhere. I just don't know that they have that kind of money. If you've noticed, they really haven't been raking in the money. In fact, the last, you know, campaign contribution report I came across has Biden well ahead of Trump in fundraising over this last quarter, which is enormous. I mean, it's an enormous amount different.
And I think one of the problems with his daughter-in-law, Laura Trump, taking over the RNC is that it's scaring off some of the bigger Republican donors. So people who would normally be giving millions and millions of dollars to the party are thinking, I don't want my money going to, you know, Donald Trump's legal defense fund. You know, that gives people the opportunity to dump money into super PACs or to state parties or candidates or whatever. Like they can spread that money out themselves, or somebody can basically just start a PAC that's like, you know, the RNC version that's not going to pay for Trump's legal fees, right? And all of those big donors that were Nikki Haley people can dump their cash in there. But those people they're not coming in with their millions if that's what the RNC ends up doing.
No, they're going to save their money. Going to be interesting to see where this goes. And look, I love the argument that they made about Trump can, you know, basically name his price because the Saudis will come in and pay anything. It'll be interesting to see if the Saudis do come in and bail him out.
Putin.
Or
through a shell company.
There you go. Should be interesting to see what happens over the next couple of days. But as always, Sarah, I appreciate the time, the thoughts, the information. Always good stuff. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
You as well. Our good friend, Sarah Burris. If you want to check out her work, rawstory.com. That's where you go to see that. What do you think? Does he file bankruptcy on Monday? Is that what happens? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. We'll be right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1941. That was the day that the generators began to operate at one of the most massive construction projects ever built, the Grand Coulee Dam. The dam generates hydropower from the Columbia River in Washington State. The completed structure is the largest concrete dam in the world. It's 550 feet tall at its highest point and only 57 feet shy of being a mile wide. The dam is a massive 450 feet thick at its base, tapering to 30 feet at the top. It contains nearly three times the concrete of the famed Hoover Dam. 8,000 people attended the opening ceremony. They were led in a parade by the Grand Coulee High School Marching Band. But not everyone celebrated the dam. The project submerged fishing sites and burial grounds sacred to Native Americans. One area it submerged was Kettle Falls, a place where Native Americans are thought to have fished for 7,000 years. The project also took its toll on its workers. 77 men died while building the dam. One was Gerald Cobble, a 32-year-old worker who was struck and killed by a heavy steel bucket. During the tough times of the Great Depression, men had flocked to Washington in hopes of landing a job. Thousands found work on the project. The workers labored by shifts around the clock to construct the massive foundation. The Coulee Dam became known as the biggest thing on earth and inspired this song by Woody Guthrie.
Well, the world has seven wonders.
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Towers, I guess you know them well. But now the greatest wonder is in Uncle Sam's fair land. It's that King Columbia River and the big Grand Coulee Dam.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So Paul Manafort is coming back. Yeah, evidently the leak has been Donald Trump is bringing Paul Manafort back. Remember Paul Manafort, convicted felon, you know, lots of ties in Ukraine, lots of, you know, sleazy underhanded dealings. This seems like one of those acts of desperation because Manafort's generally not somebody you bring in when things are going well. He's the kind of guy you keep at arm's length. And, you know, he does the dirty work, but he's, I guess, coming back. That's evidently the word. Also, this is fun in talking about the legal defense fund, in talking about, you know, what we were just talking about with Sarah, the fact that, you know, Trump's, you know, struggling for cash. The AP reported that Trump's new joint fundraising agreement with the RNC directs donations to his campaign and a political action committee that pays Trump's legal bills before the RNC gets a cut. This means that, you know, he's inviting donors to prioritize, you know, paying his bills, which is great. How do you get, I'm trying to figure out how you get around that. But you know, they're going to divert funds to the Save America PAC. And by doing that, it's more likely that the Republican money, will be going to Trump's lawyers, who evidently have received at least $76 million over the last two years. Defending him against four felony indictments and his civil cases. I gotta wonder how that's gonna help with the fundraising effort. Now here's the thing. The moneyed interests do have a reason to fund all of this. Because if you look at this Heritage Foundation Project 2025, this is the payoff. If they can get Trump elected, we can make patronage great again, and you can get people that you want. This could be the ultimate in fundraisers. Hey, big rich guy who owns a big corporation, You want somebody working at the EPA. You want somebody in the Department of Labor. You want somebody, you know, in Commerce. You want someone in the Treasury Department. You want somebody at the Federal Trade Commission. You want somebody in any of those regulatory agencies or bodies that you hate so much. Do you want someone friendly to you? Make a donation today. I can see the ad. I can see it clear as day on how this is being sold. Now, it's interesting to me that the Heritage Foundation, who has, you know, they've always tried to be above board and try and be the intelligentsia, if you will, getting down into the muck with this. Huh. Now, they go, well, you know, it's all about pushing conservative policies. No, it's about the thousands of right-wing personnel ready to fill in for all of the firees when Trump goes and fires all the federal workers through Schedule F. That's what this is about. But I'll tell you, it is going to be interesting to see how this new fundraising scheme works out. And if they do start auctioning off, you know, hey, you got a nephew that needs a job? Are they sufficiently loyal to the orange one? Make a donation and they can have whatever job they want in the federal government. Why? Because we're making patronage great again. That's what we're doing, folks. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.